It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So what is your social media obsession? Oh, come on. Chances are you have one, particularly if you're in your 20s and 30s. And you're not alone. When so many of us are obsessed with status updates and selfies, what does overindulging in social media mean for our psychological well-being? I'm joined now in Studio A by Brian Primack of the University of Pittsburgh School of Health Sciences, who is directing a new Pitt Center for Advanced Research on Media, Technology, and Health. He joins us now in Studio A. Brian Primack, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having me.
We'd like to hear from you. What is your social media obsession, and how bad or good is it? Join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. So, Brian Primack, why are we so enmeshed in the allure of social media?
Well, it fills a lot of important niches in society. We don't feel as connected to each other in some ways, and so this really gives people an opportunity to connect with people that they don't see as much and on the surface at least to form better social relationships.
Why don't we feel as connected? What's going on there, first of all?
Well, I think that over the last several decades, this has been progressing. We have always been social people and living in the same room in many older cultures. But then in today's world, we all are in our little apartments in different rooms, in different places. There's a lot more space between us. And so I think that people have always had that craving.
So you would think that it would be – I guess some of us might think that it would be the opposite, that we enjoy – the opportunity to be alone and to be with our own thoughts and not be interrupted. But you're saying that the disconnect from that some of the old world values and ways of living are things that we as human beings are more likely to gravitate toward and miss when they're not there?
Yes, I think that you've really captured it well. There are certainly a lot of compelling things, and a lot of these things have been sold to us through newer media and through industries that benefit from having selling more houses and more television so that everybody has their own copy of something. But at the same time, it's a very very much built into our DNA that we are a social people. You see a group of animals. They all kind of fall asleep on each other. We don't do as much of that in today's world. And so it leaves this very important niche that I think social media has at least partially helped to fill in some ways. At the same time, though, I think that when you first introduced this, you mentioned that there are some potential downsides to that. And yes, we are noticing that. Maybe it is that you feel more connected when you have more friends, quote unquote. But on the other hand, when you have more friends, you have more to be concerned about. You are more people responding negatively to my posts. You're seeing all of the most positive pictures that they send of their lives, and you think to yourself, can I measure up to this? And so those are some of the concerns for mental and emotional health that we are concerned about.
And I want to get into some of the things that you'll be looking into and the impacts of all this. But as far as the actual addiction, some people are skeptical about it. Adults, particularly in their 20s and 30s, are oftentimes, according to studies, reluctant or unwilling to admit that social media addiction is an actual reality. So let's look at that first. Is that, in fact, something that we can say does exist?
It's a very good question, and you're not the only person asking it. When they recently put together the most current DSM-5, the diagnostic manual that helps psychiatrists figure out who has a particular psychiatric disease, they discussed exactly these issues. And what they came down to is there is some evidence that there is addiction to certain media, like social media and like video games in particular, was something that they came out with. However, they very specifically said we need to do more research on this. In other words, they weren't able to, you know, put their fist down on the table and say this is just as strong an addiction as many of these other ones that we have. We certainly want to keep it on our radar and we want to think about it, but we need to do more. And that's one of the niches that we're hoping that our center will help fill.
And we're talking with Brian Primack of the University of Pittsburgh School of Health Sciences. He's directing a new Center for Advanced Research on Media Technology and Health. You can join our conversation. We're talking about social media obsession. It can be a bad thing. For some, it's enjoyable. 412-246-2002 is the number to call, 412-246-2002, to join the conversation. We'd like to hear about your social media obsession. Is it something that you're concerned about? Is it something that you simply enjoy and can't live without? 412-246-2002. And again, our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm, on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. What does overindulging in social media mean for our psychological well-being? We seem to have established why someone might overindulge, but if you're sitting on a computer for hours at a time, or you're constantly checking out your iPhone, your email, going on the internet, whatever it may be, whatever the obsession may be, video games, etc., is that necessarily a bad thing? Is there an adverse psychological impact there?
There isn't necessarily a bad thing. I think as with a lot of other things in health, it depends. It depends on many different factors about the particular individual. This is the way it is in a lot of social sciences. Is it a big deal if parenting is a particular way in your household? Well, it may. It may be a big concern. But on the other hand, a person may develop resilience from having, some kind of a negative experience. And so, for example, you're talking about obsessions and social media. I mean, maybe it depends on the personality of the person. Maybe some people really thrive if they're much more extroverted, for example, and they are able to not only deal with responding to all the people and engaging with the social media, but it actually, enhances their life. But on the other hand, maybe somebody who's more introverted, maybe more anxious, or have a tendency in that direction, they might be more negatively affected by some of these exposures. The bottom line is that at this point, we really don't know. And so a lot of the research we're doing is relatively exploratory.
What would be the negative effect, especially with somebody who is introverted?
Well, for example, there is an entire field now of research that deals with something that has been called quote-unquote Facebook depression. There have been a number of studies that have come out of the American Association of Pediatrics that have specifically identified this is a potential trigger for depression and anxiety.
Why?
And because you are – if you're extremely involved in the social media world and you are constantly seeing pictures that people are posting of the best possible scenarios, the most positive things that have ever happened to them, because of course people aren't posting the shameful things, the problems. And when they do post a problem, it's I broke my toe, so that they can get some sympathy for that.
Right. There's this kind of a narcissistic aspect to social media, isn't there?
There is. And if you are being constantly exposed to that, then you sort of get this idea that everybody else has this ideal world, this ideal life. Everybody else is happy, but you live in the normal world. And so you can't possibly measure up to that. And so some people may be, more susceptible to seeing all of those images. We've also seen this type of thing with advertising. If you sit in front of a television for hours and hours a day and you are constantly being bombarded with messages about if you need, you need this particular kind of soap or this particular kind of car to be a good person, and everybody is all
but
happy.
That's always kind of been there, hasn't it? I mean, since the first ads went out there, you were made to feel that, oh, my armpits have to smell like roses.
That's right.
24/7.
Yes. I mean, that's the specific technique that they use in the industry is they say, we want to make people feel like they're not enough just the way they are because that's going to help us sell.
So doesn't the social media then amplify that or just become, a multiple factor of, you can reach more people? But isn't the effect the same, I guess is what I'm asking.
I think the effect is the same. And like you mentioned when you said the word amplify, it might even be a little bit more exaggerated because with an advertisement, you sort of know that they're selling you a bill of goods. You're thinking to yourself, they're doing this for a particular reason. But when you log on, you sort of have the sense that this is the real world. I mean, even if you realize on some level people are posting just the most positive things that are happening to them, it doesn't really sink in. And you do start to feel potentially, again, not all the time, but potentially that you just don't measure up.
And so you're buying into an idea. You don't necessarily recognize that you're being manipulated as easily as you would if you were sitting in front of a television set and said, okay, I know that this is a commercial. I know that some ad agency is behind this.
Exactly.
We are talking with Brian Primack. He is with the University of Pittsburgh School of Health Sciences and is directing a new Pitt Center for Advanced Research on Media Technology and Health. And he is looking in particular at whether overindulging in social media affects our psychological well-being. We'll get into some of what he will be doing with that coming up, but we wanted to hear from you and about your social media obsession. 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. It may be an obsession for you. It may be for someone that you know. We'd like to hear your story, and we know that it's not necessarily always a bad thing. ESSPGH at WESA.FM, our email, and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Let's go to Ted in Mount Washington. Ted, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with Brian Primack.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good, thank you.
Real quick, I unplugged like 3 years ago, and it's been fantastic.
You unplugged?
Yes.
What do you mean by
that?
You got off the grid?
Yeah. Get off the grid, man. Because a couple things. The simple things is like writing a letter, just enjoying the interaction, with people and everything else. It enhanced your life versus, social media. It's fake, And it two things I think that human beings we have to address is privacy. I remember when Edward Snowden was saying about that, just private moments. And also death. When people are online, even at the age of 8 or even 12, you leave a data track. And what happens when you die? What happens to all that information? Sometimes I think we forget that we're human. And the last question is, when is the proper age should a child even engage in the social networking? Should there be a time limit, wait until the brain develops at least to maybe even 15 years old or something, because I think we lose something. And I never forget when this one professor said, he said, what if you don't know about the next Hemingway or the next great writer because you're engaged on a social network? And I thought about that, and that's pretty scary.
Ted, these are great points, great questions, and things I think some of us have thought about, but you articulated it well. And so, Brian, taking copious notes across from me, all of this food for thought from Ted. And what about what he is saying? And I guess let's work our way backwards. Is the time that is spent engaging in social media and maybe not spending time, as I mentioned before, just with your own thoughts, preventing someone who is intelligent and insightful from sharing their brain, their art, and their ideas with the world?
I think Ted has brought up a whole host of interesting ideas, and I definitely think that obviously for him, this has been a really positive move over the past few years, and I think it's a really good illustration of how, yes, that unplugging can really help our own natural thoughts and creativity. The way it is in today's world, we're so connected that, you know, if you have a moment while you're in line at the post office or going to the bathroom or whatever, people are immediately hooked into something else. And so we don't really necessarily have a chance for that creativity. And so I think Ted is, you know, a perfect example of someone who, you know, that really helped. It's also important, though, to acknowledge that, you know, even though, you know, you might not hear about the next great writer because you're so focused on social media, you might actually hear about the next great writer on social media. So it's just the point is that for some people, there probably are positives. You know, I think about some of my patients who because I'm also a physician and I think about people who have rare conditions and, for example, don't have a community right here in Pittsburgh to talk about their condition with. And so they are on some kind of a social media network that, you know, talks to people from Germany and Australia and New Zealand and Zambia who have the same condition as them. And they're able to leverage that for positive. So I think it's a good illustration of how in many cases like Ted's, there are a lot of negatives and some potential benefit to unplugging. But in other cases, you know, we also need to acknowledge what the positives are and find a good way to balance those things.
Are you hearing about people doing what Ted just said that he has done, and that is to disconnect and to go off the grid, as he put it? And in his words, he said it feels great.
Yes. Absolutely. And there have been a number of people who, you know, go off the grid completely like Ted did. But there are also other ways of doing that unplugging. Some people unplug for several hours a day. Some people unplug for a particular day of the week. I guess this was the whole idea behind the Sabbath. You know, at one point was a cessation of the normal activity. And if today's world, you know, the social media world becomes part of our normal activity, maybe that's a way, you know, that some people find, you know, to do that unplugging. Some people just do, you know, a week, a year to sort of experience that and see, you know, how that's different. Some people go to meditation and during that meditation time specifically are unplugged. So I think, you know, Ted is showing us one way that this is possible, but there are a lot of other ways too of unplugging.
And before we get to our next caller, he also brought up some points about young people and their use. He's saying, should people younger than the age, children younger than the age of 15, you know, how closely should their use of social media and technology be monitored? I think one of the things that we see more often is you have a carload of kids, and whereas in years past they might be interacting with each other, their heads are down and they're staring at some device in their hand. They're not talking to anybody, and more often than not, you see this out in the world. Is that a bad thing?
It's a very good question, and it is definitely one of the things that we want to study and we need to look into. You're absolutely right, and that scene is very familiar, that there are a group of teenagers in quote-unquote a social situation. In other words, they're physically right next to each other. They could be looking at each other in the eye. They could be, you know, playing some kind of a game or talking or really interacting, and they're all interacting with somebody across the world. And often that is a marketer. That's a, you know, it's some kind of a you know, something that they're being sold. And so you know, yes, theoretically this could very well be a problem. However, we need to do more research that's evidence-based and really figure out in what way is it a problem. I mean, maybe they're also getting some benefits from whatever they're discovering. How do we create that balance where they will be able to leverage the positive things about this medium but still have a normal life where they also have physical social relationships right around them?
412-246-2002 to join our conversation here on Essential Pittsburgh with Brian Primack of the University of Pittsburgh School of Health Sciences. Let's go to Vance in Squirrel Hill. Vance, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Vance.
Hi. I wanted to follow up about the earlier discussion about how social media linked depression and how that's similar and different to kind of other marketed, you know, depression based on being exposed to advertising. I wonder if with social media, the larger danger as it links to depression as opposed to a kind of generalized advertising is that you're getting these messages of perfection, of a world that doesn't exist from people that you have self-selected, the people that you know, your friends and family and your peer group, rather with advertising in general, it's kind of just this general message that's pushed out to what these societal norms are. So I wonder if that link to depression could be so much more stronger because this is a group of people you know rather than just the population at large that these messages are being pushed to.
Interesting.
Yeah, Vance, I think that makes a lot of sense. And the reason is that we know from other research in social science that people are very susceptible to messages from their own peers. This is why we're moving to a lot of peer-led prevention programs, for example. And then at the same time, people are also very susceptible to things that have high production values. In other words, if something is really well produced, then they're more likely to believe that that is more true. And so what Vance is bringing up is this great point that this particular medium combines the two. It's not only something that has great production values and kind of, you know, makes it look like this is reality, but it's also coming directly from the peers that you care most about. So I think he said it very well.
Daryl on Twitter says Twitter is his social media obsession, and he puts in parentheses, of course. He worries about how social media can make people feel professionally envious and also how parents can sometimes pay more attention to their phones than their children. Usually it's the other way around, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm glad that he brought that up, though, about parents, because I have been thinking about this, and I've seen studies in the past saying that, you know, parents can be exposed to as much as 1,000 minutes a week of screens but actually talk to their children less than a half an hour on average over time. And I don't think that this is because we're mean, evil people. I think that this is because this is sort of the way things have developed over time. It's very easy for us in our current situation to come home and, you know, watch the game, and that's 3 hours, and then you watch the next game, and then there's what they call sticky content, so you watch the next thing, and all of a sudden you've been in front of this screen for 500 minutes. But, you know, when do we really communicate with our children, talk to our children? We shuttle them to and from soccer practice and ballet, but do we really sit down with them and say, who are your friends? Tell me, you know, and I think that certainly the ubiquitous nature of social media makes that even more of a challenge.
And when we talk about kids and just sort of the lack of or children and the lack of interaction that they have with their parents or maybe with their siblings, there I know are concerns from people who have looked at studies that show that children and young people outside of school are using social media or technological devices of one kind or another for up to 10 hours a day.
You're absolutely right. And I know that sounds like a shocking statistic, but I know the people that did that study well, and this is the Kaiser Family Foundation study, the Generation M Squared. They did the study extremely well. And what they found is that you know, between 8 and 10 hours a day, depending on how you you know, measure media exposure, and you think to yourself, do they even have that many hours a day? Part of the reason is because that includes weekends when you can be exposed for say 14 to 16 hours. Because this study, they were specifically looking outside of school. They were not counting any media that you happen to use in your computer class or in your social studies class. They were just looking outside school. So if you're talking about 8 to 10 hours a day of media exposure, it's something we definitely need to think about. It's something that definitely affects our health. And that's what our center is all about, is saying, how does it affect our health in negative ways? How does it affect it in positive ways? And then how can we create interventions that simultaneously decrease, buffer the negative stuff, and increase the positive stuff.
And what is the effect of all this? For example, we read or hear that teens are becoming desensitized about things like alcohol and drugs and believing that, for example, everyone else is using them, so why shouldn't I? That would be one adverse effect. Is that perception based in reality?
It is. There are good data about desensitization. Probably the best data about desensitization are in the area of video games, because there definitely are a lot of first-person shooter games where a person really sort of gets it into their blood, their DNA, that this is how I interact with people around me, by shooting them if I see somebody pop up. And there are good studies that show that those people can be more desensitized to violence. However, as with everything, there are also video games that can potentially improve health. We're using video games to help people to decrease pain and anxiety. There's a game where you can go through virtual reality if you're a burn victim, while you're having your bandages changed, this sort of soothing snow-like world. There are great games that help people with rehabilitation. And so, I don't think we want to take these amazing tools like video games and just throw them away. But we do need to think very careful about what are those specific negatives, like you mentioned, desensitization to violence, potential addiction. But what are the positives, and how can we try to decrease the negative while increasing the positive?
Let's take one last call from David in Glenshaw, Hampton, who has been holding. David, thank you for waiting. You're on with Brian Primack.
Hello.
Hi, David.
I'm driving along and I'm listening to you talking about putting the best Facebook forward on Facebook, and I'm like, wow, well, that's really me. I used to write journals or diaries, and I could never keep them for more than a couple of months. But Facebook, I've had a journal going on there for a couple of years, and every day I put something out on there, and this is great. And it didn't take me long to realize I can't talk about religion or politics, because all I'm going to do is get into argumentation with people, and I've ended up losing some actual friends because, wow, I didn't realize this is who you were, and this is really uncomfortable. So I try to put all this and keep my page a very, very happy page. And then I realized that I'm so concerned about how happy I want my page to be that I really find myself looking, how many likes did I get on that? How many comments? Oh, I didn't get enough likes. I didn't get enough comments. Maybe I should delete that comment. That's not happy enough. I think I've gone overboard here on trying to put this happy face forward here.
Well, this is a good point that you bring up, David. And so how much is our – if we are really engaged, as David seems to be, and David, thank you for the call. If we're really engaged in social media and we are is there the danger that we can end up tying our own sense of self-worth in with the likes we get and how people respond to our ideas on Facebook, for example?
Yes. The caller, I think, really captures an important balance that we need to make. I mean, on the one side, I think what he does is great because he's sort of creating his own little journal here. He's taking the positive things he wants to remember and he's emphasizing those. And it's there's nothing wrong with that. And in fact, that can actually sort of somehow improve sense of self. This is the things that I want to really, make more of of the things that I emphasize and more of the things that I'm about. And then these are the things that I want to do less of, etc. However, then he's also bringing out, on the other hand, in order to do that, I have to be fake. I have to talk less about certain things that I might actually care about, but I have to take those away because they might not get me as many likes, as many thumbs up. And so I think the answer is somewhere in the middle. In other words, this may be there might be certain aspects of this that are a great tool to help us define those things that we really care about. But then there are other ways that some of that falseness may take away from our authentic selves. And I thought he brought that out beautifully.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, and it's almost like you're on this perpetual date where you find yourself, or 51st dates where you're trying to make this impression and constantly editing these different aspects of your life. Brian Primack is our guest. He is with the University of Pittsburgh School of Health Sciences, directing a new Pitt Center for Advanced Research on Media Technology and Health. Brian, it's been a very insightful conversation. I wish you well in this study, and we'll have to have you back as you begin to look at these issues to talk about some of the findings and results of your studies.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Paul. Happy to come back anytime.
Coming up, we will look at the economic breakthroughs being driven by women in the field of life sciences. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.